So we are then continuing in this meeting with the programs that are still outstanding. But again, let's thank you for honoring this engagement. As always, when we call on you to come and appear before this committee, you don't hesitate. And again, let's thank you, TD, and your team. We have received the apology from the minister. We know that she's in a ministerial team that is busy with matters of importance. Again, from our side, I'm aware of the apology of Mr. Bonomi, which is a standing apology. I'm not aware of any other apology. I don't know whether... you will be late or is... Okay. So I told that there was an apology from Mr. Khatebe. With that dispense with, let's then continue with our work. And I know, JT, that we are expected to start, if I'm not mistaken, with program four. Program four, and then move forward. Thank you very much, TD.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, all of the members. Good morning. Then we just going to run through the remainder of the programs that we did not conclude on the last meeting. On program four, I will quickly give a report, and Judy, as the DDG responsible, will then make additions. The first strategic objective deals with the threat to the environmental quality and integrity that we have indicators that would manage that those threats. The first one, the first key performance indicator relates to the climate change regulatory framework and tools developed and implemented. You can see all of the members that third quarter we are yellow, we are green on the second quarter. And basically there we are busy with the process of compiling a draft climate change bill, and we needed also to undergo the socio-economic assessment which is undertaken by the presidency. And we are certainly not even going to be green in the next financial year because of the limited program of for the sitting of Parliament. So in terms of prioritization within the Cabinet, the climate change bill is not going to be able, we're not going to be able to move forward with it this year. But at least the draft will be published in the course of the year. So we are behind schedule there, and certainly it will also not be green necessarily at the end of the financial year. Then the next ones are green, which means we've achieved those targets. But just in summary, the second one deals with the National Framework for Climate Services. We have undertaken stakeholder engagements in order for us to be able to have an aligned system of how we respond to climate adaptation requirements, working together with other scientific authorities, weather services being one of them, as well as the Agricultural Resource Council, the Agricultural Research Council, ARC, and Water Research Commission, just to mention a few, and some of the other academic institutions. So the work there is progressing well. And then on the next one, we were to also prepare a toolkit, a Let's Respond toolkit for the municipalities. We have already, I think, work has progressed in that regard, because again, when it comes to climate change impact in respect of adaptation, the local sphere of government is going to be the one that needs to be more ready to facilitate adaptation actions for the citizens of the country. So we're making good progress there. And the next one relates to provincial and local government engagement on climate change adaptation programs. we have again in this element a positive progress, both in our activities that support the Cities Forum, and there is what is called Cities Network that we work with in partnership with SAGA in respect of the implementation of these programs. There was also a regional congress on local government plan change solutions for cities in order to address climate change integration into city planning, and just to make sure that we achieve our objective of a climate resilient cities. Then the next area, again, in respect to provinces that we prioritize in three provinces in respect of climate change adaptation response strategy and plans, that was Limpopo, Mpumalanga in Northwest, and we have already made a good progress in respect of those engagements with those provinces, and the climate adaptation plans have been developed, and now there are sector specific reports that are being prepared for those specific provinces. On the next strategic, still continuing a strategic objective, but key indicator being the sector mitigation potential and impact studies conducted. We were to have a draft report for phase one on in terms of National Carbon Sinks Atlas and data collection and analysis. The National Data Sinks Atlas, or the National Report in respect of Carbon Sinks Atlas, is already developed, and therefore we have met that target. However, on data collection and analysis, the target is the same for quarter three and quarter four, which is why it appears yellow. But there is a progress. Data collection has already been initiated, and the inception report will then be analyzed on that basis. By the end of the financial year, we will be able to meet this target. And in respect of the next area of climate response policy interventions, we were supposed to then update, or at least develop terms of reference to update our desired emission reduction objectives. That's what the DERO stands for. Honorable members, we still have outlined what we need, but we did not have a milestone to be met. That's why that area is blue. But at the end of the year, we need the three interventions implemented for updating the desired emission reduction objectives. And this aligns with our carbon budgeting process, which honorable members have been briefed on previously. Next, we are on the next areas, honorable members. Again, we've met the targets. In summary, it's about the one that deals with the approved pollution prevention plans for carbon budgets. Remember, honorable members, that in terms of us as developing a system, a mitigation system for the country, a climate change mitigation system, we are then expecting that we need to have a plan for industry to prevent the increase of their carbon footprint, or at least implement some measures to reduce their greenhouse gases. So we were then processing pollution prevention plans and also our regulations that would compel industry to report the greenhouse gas emissions. In the past, we were collecting that information without it being compulsory. Now we need to make sure that there is compulsory submission of those greenhouse gas emission reports. And we have also undertaken a notice. The minister already processed a draft notice to declare some of the greenhouse gases as priority pollutants, and the National Pollution Prevention Plan regulations will then be published early in this new financial year. on the next quarter, the fourth quarterly Green Fund implementation report prepared. Again, this is an area where we are using the Green Fund to then leverage private sector participation in the fact of clean technologies and achieve enhance the climate change response actions for the country. There is a monitoring and evaluation progress report that is available on projects that were approved under the implementation of the DBSA. The department has got a memorandum of agreement with the Development Bank of South Africa to roll out the projects funded through the Green Fund. Then the next area where we have yellow, honourable members, it's an area where the indicator is about the number of sector adaptation plans finalized and implemented for at least a specific sectors that were prioritized: agriculture, water, health, settlements, and biodiversity. There is a program of action, however, it's not yet fully implemented. We participated in the water sector and sanitation policy dialogue in October, which was then beginning to review areas requiring climate change integration and alignment. Our members, in the context of drought, the adaptation plans and framework that the department has put in place is quite instructive, and if all the sectors then implement those adaptation plans proactively, we then increase our ability to be resilient during some of the extreme weather events like droughts, during El Nino, and maybe in future when it's La Nina or when there is flooding. So the department is continuing to participate in the drought hearing committee that is convened by COGTA, and Jude can give the latest update. Yesterday the meeting took place, and there is also a health hearing committee that is also focusing on the health sector approaches to climate change adaptation. As you may appreciate, honourable members, some of the diseases would be exacerbated by extreme weather events. If you have, for instance, some of the insects that tend to spread some of the venom, whether it's what is this thing that was a widening part of East Africa? No, they were the Ebola, not Ebola. Was it Ebola? No, so what? What are these other? It's Ebola, ne? Yeah, I'm seeing something else. Yeah, it is Ebola. It arises from some of the insects that cause, or even some of the other organisms that are found in the agricultural production processes. And therefore, in extreme weather events, some of those would become more resistant and they cause more problems for the health of citizens. So that, in essence, is what is being dealt with. So we've made focus on the indicator that relates to climate change risk analysis and adaptation studies. We've done risk analysis for two provinces, which is the Northern Cape and the Free State, and also Educational analysis and the needs assessment. That's what SANA stands for. Next, yeah, yes. That's what SANA stands for. That's situational analysis and needs assessment. And there are recommendations that would then also help us to continuously update the reports as part of the review processes that we would undertake with provinces. We are then, the next slide, on the air quality management. Again, honourable members, there is an indicator that talks to the improvement in the national air quality indicators. We have an annual target there, and the national air quality indicators of 0.79 has been presented with the 2015 State of the Air Report and the Air Quality Governance Report. I would think, Judy, you would have to explain what exactly is the progress. Is it more positive, 1.9 versus, or is it you need more to improve to make it to reach then the 1.3 target? And the national, the number of air quality monitoring stations that are reporting to SAQIS, which is the South African Air Quality Information System, have continued to increase. We have 136 stations, 110 of them are government-owned stations that report on SAQIS, and then DIA and the city of Umhlanga too, the KZN, are in the process of finalizing data sharing agreements on three stations, and therefore this is going to then increase the number of sites that are reporting on SAQIS through that agreement. Then the next annual target, honourable member, is the 40 air quality monitoring stations meeting a minimum of 80% data recovery. Our headquarter target was then to present the draft program to the working group, which is the NINEC working group, for adoption and finalize the air quality monitoring program to enable live reporting on the air quality information. We have developed the draft program. However, it has not gone through the approval processes, which is why it is right. So we are behind schedule there. However, we will meet the target by the end of the financial year. MINMEC is taking place, was supposed to take place this Friday, but now, because of the registration, local government registration, the minister is postponing it to next week. So hopefully they will, the MINMEC will then finalize and approve. Next, key performance indicator relates to the percentage of facilities with atmospheric emission licenses reporting to the National Air Quality Atmospheric System, which is NAEIS. So we have a target to conduct a quality assurance of draft national emission inventories based on the reported activities on the basis of us updating the national equality, is it national atmospheric emissions licenses, master list for 2016 reporting year. Now, what has been done here, honourable members, we're behind. Second quarter were red, so we made progress on the third quarter. We have the master list updated for 2016 reporting in respect of 990 facilities. And the 2014 compliance report has also been developed for the same atmospheric emissions licenses. And we provided support as a national department in order for us to be able to confirm the status compliance with a number of municipalities in the Western Cape, in Gauteng, that's what GDART is meant for, the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development in Gauteng. In Kangala District Municipality, Mpumalanga, Sotibeng District Municipality, and Ekurhuleni. So those are the areas where we have been able to provide support, falling short of then meeting the third quarter target, but there is work in progress in this regard. The target, Judy will confirm it will be met by the end of the financial year. Next slide, on the air quality regulatory framework and tools. All of the members, we have planned air quality management plans. We were supposed to, through those plans, have activities that are implemented in the quarter, and therefore we would compile reports, particularly for the Highveld, Vaal, Triangle, and Eshet, and the Waterberg, Bujanala area. We have made progress in respect of the Waterberg County area. We published and directed the the plan in December last year, and then for the priority area implementation team, we've also had a number of successful engagements with the Water Bank Mudanala authorities to initiate the implementation of the air quality management plan. There are activities that will certainly be behind the schedule here from some of the air quality health areas, and certainly I think we will be, we may be green in one area, but not the water bed. We won't reach the target or the target at the end of the financial year on in respect of the water bed. Again, honourable members, the team has reported the challenges with the engagement with the stakeholders, because the air quality management plans for these priority areas require participation and a number of stakeholders. So if they are not happy with one aspect, then there tends to be a delay in respect of what you then finalize the implementation plan on. On the next strategic objectives for sector monitoring and evaluation, we have an annual target for climate change monitoring and evaluation reports that should be published, and we have developed and finalized the annual reports, and therefore we think by the end of the financial year it will be published by the Minister. The greenhouse gas inventory, we needed to have to appoint independent reviewers in order for them to consider the inventory report, and then basically before we submit and publish the inventory, greenhouse gas inventory. So there has been progress, but I think the service provider has now been appointed. So certainly I would hope that there is assurance from the team that this target will be fully met by the end of the financial year. In fact, they have started with the review. Then the on the pie chart, in essence, on our members, out of 23 targets for the third quarter, 14 of the targets were met, and then 5 were in progress. Those are the ones that were yellow that I explained why they were behind schedule. And then the 2 that are off target I've also explained, and then the one that was not having any milestone to be met from the third quarter. So let me allow Judy to quickly make an addition on the ones that were behind.
Thank you. Thank you, Gigi. Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think, Gigi, the two red ones in particular. The one that you've just recently referred to right at the end, which is on screen now, the independent reviewer not appointed. In this case, we actually have done the draft greenhouse gas inventory. So the greenhouse gas inventory exists, the draft exists, but this is the quality control part which is required in terms of the UNFCCC's guidelines and methodology for submission of the greenhouse gas inventory. So it was, we were behind in appointing the independent reviewer, but this will definitely be green. The independent reviewer started their work, so this will be finalised in time. Then the other red, and therefore the whole GHG inventory will therefore be yes. I think, Gigi, perhaps just to say that we do perhaps just need to say that the Minister has requested that this goes to Cabinet for permission to the public to publish for public comment. And normally the reason we publish for public comment is to ensure completeness of data. because we depend on it as an industry in particular for their data, and to get any views on methodologies. And so probably publishing or submitting to Cabinet may slow down the process. But I think also it's politically important that Cabinet is aware of, and I think this is the Minister's view, that it's politically important for Cabinet to be aware of what the inventory is saying, particularly in light of our commitments, of Harris commitments. Then, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the second red is around the equality monitoring stations that meet a minimum of 80% data recovery. We missed the deadline of the Working Group 2, which is our engagement, our quarterly engagement with the provinces and licensing authorities. It should have been submitted to them in September. We had the equality, the HOTLA in September, therefore it only went to the Working Group 2 in January. So it has been discussed now with the Working Group 2. But I think it's easy to say that there is a deeper issue here. And the deeper issue, and that is really what we are grappling with, the deeper issue is that our monitoring stations, we are struggling to keep the monitoring stations nationally functioning, let alone meeting minimum 80% data recovery, we're struggling to keep the functioning. And it goes back to the issue of maintenance and the owners of the monitoring stations, the air quality monitoring stations, which could be local authorities, which could be provincial authorities, actually putting forward the budget to maintain these systems. So we have an asset management system which is currently being set up, which would mean that we, as DIA, are able to check electronically on a day-to-day basis to see which of the monitoring stations are not functioning and why. So this would give us more a much better understanding of exactly where the problems are, whereas at the moment what we have to do is we do it by email to find out which stations are working, which stations are not, and we present a report to MinMec every MinMec to alert MinTech and MinMec as to which of the stations are working or not working. It's partially a budget issue, partially a technical issue. Of course, now with the budget cuts, certain of the functions are falling off the priority list of provinces and local authorities, and this is one that we believe we really cannot allow to fall off, because it really is the way of telling the nation what the status is of our air quality. So, Honourable Chair, those are the two reds. I'm not sure if you'd like me to go into others.
That is, we will just leave it to members if they will need more clarity on any other matter that they said that they would raise those matters. Anybody? So I just wanted to get, I know just here, whilst we are dealing with one area, but it's one in two, the climate change and air quality. Is there anybody who wants to say anything from the department on any of the two? If there's nobody who wants to say anything, then we'll then open to welcome, Helen, a long time not seen, but welcome nonetheless. It's nice to see you here. I see, since you have not been around, you have also aged, you're having white hair, we are going to have more white hair with all the difficulties we have. But on a serious note, most welcome, Dr. Sheldon. Colleagues, here is the report. We have two other programs that we must go to, the 7 and the 5, because we did 6. But because of the nature of this program, can we dispense with it so that we don't allow time to make us forget about whatever issue that we would like to raise. Program 4. Colleagues, any takers? yes, madam. Madule. Makubele, sorry. Sorry, we are the Madule, yeah, the Makubele, so it's underneath for Madule.
Mashallah. Thanks and morning, members and officials from the department. Just on the first slide, the yellow there, that indicates that we may not reach or achieve that target on the basis that there has been delays yet, but also in this initial year, you suspect that we may not be able to deal with it due to shorter period of the sitting of Parliament. The issue may be, what agency do we have there? Because I don't think we are not going to be dealing with any legislation as Parliament. We are going to process some, we are going to pass some, depending on the agency and the importance of those particular legislations or pieces of legislation. Now, on this one, what makes you decide that you think it can as well just be postponed, we can leave without it even in the next financial year? Just to be sure, so that we don't just agree with you that yes, even if it's not covered, we are fine. I think you will share with us. The second slide, I'm very much aware that it's a green, particularly on the bottom part. You had identified three provinces in terms of developing strategies and plans and so on. That's fine. But the issue I have, which might not necessarily have been in terms of the target, is to what extent are you able, or are you going to be able, to measure their effectiveness? It's one thing to develop plans and strategies. It's another to ensure that indeed they do have an impact and achieve the desired goals. So, whether we would have been able to develop anything in that particular regard, with regard to the that would be page 24, I think. We may be moving from different packages and so on. But just the one that follows, talking about report, again it's a green we have achieved. You're talking about leveraging the green fund and so on, and having partnership with DBSA, which is fine. But I'm interested in understanding the project timeline. Is it the end of this financial year? Or what does it mean? Is it getting into the next financial year? Or when is it happening and so on and so on? It's a simple one, I think, that one is not a major issue. On the
one... That's your last one, no mind. Then we will give you another bite. That be your last one, then you come back, the one that comes. Yeah. It's because you're a whip.
From the red to the first red. I think we've got a lot of issues here. Well, some of those you talked to. But my interest will be understanding whether on our own, we do have human resource capacity to handle these facilities. It's one part to keep them functioning and so on. Are there skills being transferred, or we rely on the private sector to operate them? Because when we visited these areas, in the main, in some of them, it's not our own people who operate. How far are we? Have we made progress? Are we making advance? Are we trying to ensure that at some point these may be operated by South African citizens, whether originally were born here or not, but at least we can be more, you know, we can say that our own.
Thank you, Hosha. Any other takers? Yes, Hosha Mali.
Thank you. I just want to follow up on the refund as proposed by the week. I would like to interest in the actual budget of the refund and the total number of projects funded, and the type of projects, and the amount. And also see the geographic spread around all 9 provinces. How many projects per province? I know it will depend on provinces whether individuals support or not, and the high impact and quality of the projects. That's the first one. But I want to have an overall version consolidate all the programs where you say NA not available and no milestone. I want a comprehensive response to see this year. What then is going to happen, especially where there were no milestones for this under review. And then we will just also request once on the number of climate change risk analysis and adaptation studies collected. I know that in the report you are saying there are drafts, risk analysis. We would like to obtain the final document once it is finalized, that we are on board and afford. With regard to the provinces on funds, we are saying that through the PWG, provinces were requested to submit regular update. I just want to check the provinces complying, all 9 provinces, are they complying or not? For me, it's allowed, it's optional, depending on what the provinces are saying. But I want to check whether the other provinces are complying and give us a report. On the current budget, we are saying that it is to 9 companies. What is the state of affairs for other companies? So that you have a reflection on that. I know in the media there's a lot about this carbon credits and all these things. But just give us a more flag on the actual state of affairs around that. So yeah, that will be the three questions on climate change. Thank you.
Any other colleague? Just if there are no takers, you will know that coming from Paris, we were looking forward. We know that you are working on a piece of legislation. We knew what we were going to argue for in Paris, and therefore we had prepared ourselves locally to have some legislative framework for what we're going to argue for. What is then the implication of what you're saying there on the climate change bill? Because again, what is the impact on the timelines that we have? Because from where we're seated, at least we must have certainty that comes 2020. We know what we're doing. We have a legislative framework of what we're doing. And of course, if we have planned for only a consultation on the discussion document, that's what we're seeing there, then there might not be a delay, so that we are on the same wavelength. If you are saying that the discussion document is there, then can we have it so that all of us are on the same wavelength? If it is not there, then when can we have it? When can we start the discussion? Of course, we will also assume that a discussion document will also take on board what we agreed in Paris, how we localize what we agreed in Paris. So it's a broader issue, not necessarily in terms of what you're saying, but what is our posture moving forward? You know that certainly in our program, we have said that you still have to come to us on how do we localize the outcomes of the UNFCCC. That would be the first one. The second issue is on adaptation. We are supposed to have adaptation scenarios in place. The issue will be almost similar to what we've asked. To what level is the implementation? Indeed, that implementation might not necessarily lie with ourselves, because the scenarios of the strategies, adaptation strategy, speaks to agriculture, speaks to transport, speaks to, I think, water, health, and others. How do we monitor implementation of this? Because, as you will know, again, to a certain extent, it speaks to a discussion document on climate change response. If we are unable to implement these strategies, how on earth are we going to meet our peak plateau design long-term scenarios? If, as we speak now, we are unable to monitor five, before we even come to systems, by the way, because we also want to ask you, how do you monitor the resilience of the system on matters of climate? How do you, as a department? I could see that, to Johannesburg, when we were in Paris, there was also a cities program. And of course, Johannesburg made us quite proud. They also got a prize. Now, we don't know what that prize is for. If I sit here, what did Johannesburg get a prize for? But what is our capacity to monitor? Because it's national competence at any rate, climate change and how we respond to the difficulties of climate change. Cities is one, but the other one is this whole case you talk about of municipalities. How do you monitor? How do you monitor that municipalities are able to be as resilient as we would like them to be? What is their capacity in this very specialized area? The WIPs go to one area, air quality. We are talking about the broad climate change response, and hopefully it's also there in your discussion document. Because if, again, we have wonderful, good policies at national level, but just like our air quality regulations and laws, we are unable to implement our climate change response policy at local level, we might as well go home. Because that's where the actions are needed. That's where your adaptation measures on transport, on agriculture, and everything else are supposed to happen. How do we monitor? Now, it goes beyond what you are supposed to give 40 toolkits, 40 municipality toolkits. How do you monitor implementation of these toolkits? Now, I need to hold myself, because the whip might say, the same thing, we are now on question five. Now, I was saying, no, I'm the chair. But I think I'm on question three. We will come there, because these are very involved matters. And if we don't pay attention to them, your issues of climate change, indeed, it is with us as we speak now. Climate change is with us. Are we, all three spheres of our government, are we acting in unison and in a manner that is synergized on this matter for is it a long way to go. Same issue again on air quality. Are we working together from where we sit? You are not. Let's be on this one, is it? On this one, from where we sit on air quality, you are not working together. You might be trying your level best, but the other levels are not bringing their best onto the table. Thank you. Can answer.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think I'll perhaps just work through the targets from the top to the bottom and deal with them as the questions have arisen. So the first point was raised by the Honourable Chair and Honourable Makwele in relation to the Act. The discussion, we have a draft discussion document, but we are consulting with the relevant sector departments because I think, Honourable Chair, as you've said, it's quite difficult that we act in unison and that there is buy-in at not only at a government level but also at a stakeholder level. So the discussion document is at the point of that level of consultation. The next step is that we draft the bill on the basis of a discussion document that is supported. Certainly we would want to bring the discussion document to the portfolio committee as soon as we've got a more solid document. I think it's important that what we bring to the honourable members really has received the input from the different departments and stakeholders that we need that input from. As to the bill and what is doable this year, I think DG might want to add here, but there was a discussion internally in the department as to the number of bills that would be going through the legislative process this year. And I think a recognition that if we are only now starting to draft the bill, and given the fact that there is a fairly shorter parliamentary program in the 2016-17 period because of local government elections, it's probably unrealistic to believe that we would have a bill that is ready to go through parliament by the end of this term. Certainly we would have a bill that is ready to, that goes to cabinet for approval from cabinet for public comment. So by next financial year, the public comment period would have been completed and then a bill will be coming through to the portfolio committee to proceed with the full legislative process. But the discussion document and a draft bill, we certainly would bring to the committee as soon as we have a more comprehensive document. The question around, I think moving on to the next set of issues, is around measuring impact, and I'll deal with them separately. Measuring impact in relation to adaptation, adapting to the impacts of climate change, and then measuring impact and assessing alignment and coherence across different spheres of government in relation to mitigation or reducing emissions. So starting with adaptation, as you can see, we've started the process working with provinces, three provinces at a time, we are working with them to do their provincial vulnerability assessment to understand geographically where the provincial vulnerabilities are to the impacts of climate change, and then to formulate the provincial adaptation strategy. Similarly, we're working with the local authorities, and the Let Respond Toolkit is a tool, it's really an instrument to enable local authorities to bring climate change to a set of questions into their local authority planning, their integrated development plans, their IDPs, the local authority IDPs, and into their local authority priorities. So it's really using the tool and working with provinces and local authorities to make sure that those key climate-related questions are part of their planning, prioritization, and implementation. In terms of how we get coherence in adaptation and that's across all spheres, And this also then comes to the question of sectoral departments such as agriculture, water, science and technology, etc., all of the various sectoral departments that are responsible for dealing with adapting to the impacts of climate change. There are different tools that we are using to get that coherence. At the moment, right as we speak, what we have is an integrated program of action for the adaptation sector departments, and that we've developed together with those sector departments, DAS, Human Settlements, Health, Water, etc. And we've extracted from their adaptation sectors what their priority actions are, and that is what we are using to measure progress. It's not an easy thing to do because, as you say, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, this is outside of DEAR's responsibility. So it requires allocation of budget by sector departments, and it requires monitoring by those sector departments. So we facilitate that process to the extent that we can. Our direct area of influence is to look at what the cross-cutting adaptation requirements are, or what the cross-cutting impacts are. So where you're looking at, in particular, the impact of climate change on water, which is where South Africa will really experience climate change. Water has a direct relationship to health objectives, has a direct relationship to food security objectives. It has a direct relation, well, obviously, to availability of water for the different sectors. So we are working across those sectors to look at what the trade-offs are in different climate scenarios, in water climate scenarios or dire climate scenarios, as the case may be on the east and west. So our first tool is this integrated program of action. Our second tool, which is what we're now working towards, is a national adaptation strategy, which pulls together national actions, provincial actions, and local actions. And that is, it's one of our targets in our nationally determined contribution that was submitted to the UNFCCC for our Paris, for the Paris negotiations. So we have a target which is put out there into the international environment that specifies that South Africa is working on a national adaptation strategy that consolidates and includes a set of monitoring tools. Those monitoring tools are difficult in an adaptation context because you've got to look at what the objectives are now, what the sectoral objectives are, what is agriculture's target in terms of food security, and in our current climate, and what is agriculture's target in a drier climate. And the current drought monitoring committee is really giving us insight as to how vulnerable South Africa and Southern Africa actually is, particularly in the context of drought. So, for example, at the moment, we and this is a statistic from Department of Agriculture yesterday, our maize production is between 30 and 40% lower this year than it has been over the past 5 years. Now, that is quite significant and has implications for food security, not only for South Africa, but also for Southern Africa. So adapting to those dry climate scenarios requires us to work with water affairs and agriculture and rural development to look at what kind of options there are to make sure that we don't end up in a situation in the future going forward with lower maize production, just for example. And those are the kinds of things that we will be dealing with in the adaptation strategy. Honourable Members, just then to move on to the mitigation elements and reducing emissions, the question around the nine companies that we have allocated carbon budgets to, and what about the rest? At the moment, because we do not have a legal instrument to require the carbon budget allocation and to require the compliance of such a carbon budget, we are depending on the voluntary engagement with industry. So, and that means that in particular we need industry to provide their greenhouse gas emissions data and their production data. And so we are, and these nine companies that we have allocated the budgets to, we have received the necessary data to enable us to make an allocation that is accurate. And the accuracy is really critical. We need to make sure that the carbon budgets are accurate in relation to the production plans and strategies of these companies. So we are working systematically with companies to make sure that we have the necessary data. Of course, that's going to become a lot easier going forward with the reporting regulations, because that will mean that there is mandatory reporting, and we will then have the kind of data that is necessary to put together the carbon budget. I think also just around monitoring, as a team, we're producing an annual climate change response report, which will deal with both adaptation and mitigation, finance, technology, capacity building, all key elements. And we are using all of the instruments, all of the monitoring instruments that we have at our disposal, which we are also improving over time. So we're using the greenhouse gas inventory. We're using our biennial update report to the United Nations Climate Convention, which shows every 2 years the impact and outcome of emission reduction activities, our major activities such as renewable energy programs, transport programs, etc. We use all of our monitoring instruments and we consolidate that into a single annual report on climate change. And we will certainly be bringing that annual report, our first annual report, the first first example of what we can do, and we will be bringing that to the portfolio committee as soon as it is finalized. We're 80% there. Then, honourable members, I think the other question, oh yes, the others were the Green Fund and air quality. The air quality is a similar, it's a similar challenge in terms of how you monitor where, in fact, the licensing authorities or local authorities or provincial authorities. And once again, we have in terms of the priority areas, for each priority area, we have a priority area implementation plan, and for each of those priority areas, we have a quarterly progress report. And we work out with the stakeholders that are part of that priority area, we work out what for the year is the plan and what must be in each quarterly report and where we have made progress and where we have not made progress. We apply the pressure, as much pressure as we can, and we make sure that this information is accessible and transparent and available. But, Chair, I think, as you have correctly said, it's a difficult area, and particularly when we're battling with basics as being the monitoring stations operational. And I think we've gone into that. I hope I've covered the main... Oh, the skills, yes. Do we have the skills and expertise to deal with the maintenance of the air quality monitoring stations? It depends with who owns that monitoring station. So if the monitoring station is owned by a local authority, they have set up their own arrangements. We don't have a national sort of team, a national capacity to move from station to station. We rely on that local authority or provincial authority either to have their own technical capacity or to use whatever means they have at their disposal. So actually uneven. In some cases, where there is a technical person on site or within the province or within the local authority, then they would use that person. If not, they would, and they have a maintenance arrangement with the private sector, then they would use private sector. But as you can imagine, private sector is expensive, and since we're already dealing with budget constraints, I think that's probably part of the reason that we are struggling. And what we have done, and DG, what we are doing to try to get some order, get an orderly approach to managing these monitoring stations is We've asked each of the district, or sorry, each of the city managers or the provincial head of department to provide a plan over to demonstrate over what exactly their needs are in terms of managing and maintaining these stations, and what their plan is to get those stations up and running, so that we have we have clarity on where exactly the problems are and what support is needed.
Can I assist him? That will not assist. Can we get this as a written response? Can we agree that you will send us the written response in terms of the actual project? Of course, the other question, you can respond to that, is the recognition of the provinces, and that we have a geographic spread of those. And my video comes on that one.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add, I think, yes, the report can be made available to the honourable members, and certainly when we presented last year, we did show which provinces were under represented, but I think we can still provide that information. And we were
that was last year, yes. DG, and we are now in 2016. Yes. That call.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Jerry. The program is multi-year, because I think the other question that you asked was whether it's year to year. So those are the programs that were approved at the time. They are still running. And secondly, we had an initiative to look at what can be done to help those two provinces that were not that were underrepresented. And I think the report will then say whether we've been successful in getting from active origination on those two provinces. I think one of the members, can I then quickly catch up also on the few that questions that you raised? One, I just say on the climate change legislation, the question was what is the impact on the outcomes of Paris, or what are the indications, not the impact per se. I think one of the members, we think we would probably not have, if not have, serious negative implications, because now we still have to ratify this year, and secondly, next year we would then be able to bring forward the legislation. And secondly, the economic climate is also what's going to make very difficult for this legislation to go through. So we need to be able to do our homework very well, both in terms of what is required now in terms of government. Cabinet has implemented the SEAS, which is the Social Economic Impact Assessment, from September last year. So it's mandated. When you start the legislation, they make the assessment. So the question that we need to do today is assess what the gaps are, which is why internally I decided that we need to have a discussion on exactly what is NEMA, can you justify a standalone legislation, and whether NEMA can provide, or if we were to get amendments on NEMA, would it be sufficient to then deal with matters of climate change? What is going to be reflected in other government departments in terms of legislation, particularly energy, transport, and others, which must also align with what the outcomes, or at least the theory of change that we'll be proposing on the climate legislation. So that work needs a bit of time. And I think certainly we were under, we were quite thinking we would do that within this year, in the new financial year. But now Cabinet has also already issued a memorandum to ministers saying that they want just few legislation that must go to Parliament, and they are prioritizing the legislation. So on what you prioritize in our portfolio, but subject to minister finalizing that process of engagement in cabinet, is the oceans bill, which is the marine special bill, and the NEMA, the National Environmental Management Act amendments, which also link to the Waste Act. So those are the things that are being prioritized. I think it's three legislative aspects of the program, which is what will present to the portfolio committee during the strategic planning session, in order for the committee to understand the rationale, and also I think at that point we can then also confirm whether the climate legislation would really be something we need to commit to in our AP 2016-17 or 2017-18. And the number of other examples, I mean, even on the fuel standards, with in respect of the air quality legislation, there are areas where we cannot move if the Department of Energy is not moving. And I think coming back to your question on what our capacity as a department to monitor, I mean, this is a challenging area where you are a coordinated department with limited power to make sure that execution happens. For example, as you stated on the adaptation strategies and scenarios, we've undertaken the scenarios quite long ahead of time. We understand what each of the drought scenarios, the flood scenarios, and so on, what could be the impact on South Africa, and therefore sectors needed to have their activity plans which are funded to begin to execute. And partly what is now the devil asks is that some of the sectors delayed, but there are programs that were initiated, but it's not the holistic adaptation plan activity. And I guess, again, maybe those departments are also grappling with issues of resources, where they prioritize how much they put resources into one area versus the other. But I think it's more prudent that, I think in the discussions previously, I thought the committee had also taken a decision that there would be a hearing on the climate change response policy implementation by the key sector departments. And just a few of the portfolio committees coming together to just take stock, and maybe that is something that we still desire to see happening, to still give impetus to the implementation of climate response. And lastly, Honourable Chair, you also were asking the question about the city's climate resilience. We have the concept around green cities or sustainable cities, which again has been part of the climate change conference of Paris. Even in Devon, we had a parallel session that was focusing on cities. And we have a definition of what a sustainable city would look like. Hence, Johannesburg won, because in the Green Fund, for instance, we allocated resources to the city of Johannesburg, the city of Tshwane, I think, and Cape Town, to one, remodify or modernize their street lighting and some of the transport infrastructure that would enable the city to have to reflect those principles of sustainability. So there is a measure, and we can always, and normally the actual validation of whether you are demonstrating those sustainable principles is normally also undertaken by an independent party, not necessarily by the department, but we then participate in those processes. And lastly, the Honourable Madilo was asking the question about the no milestones for the period under review. This is an area where we were updating, Honourable Members, the what we call DEROs and carbon budgets, the desired emission reduction objectives. The reason why we had a target to update was based on the fact that our modelling of the DEROs or mitigation scenarios was based on data that was generated, for instance, in 2010 or even prior to 2010. Like in the case, for instance, if I give you the example of energy, we use the IRP 2010. We know that the IRP is updated every 5 years. So we 2015 IRP is under discussion right now, and certainly as soon as that data is finalized, we then need to update the deals. And also, as Judy is also reminding me, that the growth rate, remember again, in terms of the National Development Plan, we were using scenarios of growth of 5%, 3 to 5%. Our growth scenarios are below 1%. Therefore, our mitigation scenarios would definitely change on that basis. So that's why we did not have those milestones, because this was also dependent on some of the data becoming available. And in essence, even now, we will not be able to actually finalize the modeling work, because we'll be doing this work if Department of Energy does not quite finalize its scenarios. And even the carbon tax scenarios will have to be factored in as also the kind of critical data that we need to. And lastly, the other question from Honourable Mabilo around the risk analysis draft report, yes, certainly that report can be made available, and we can even present what it says. And then the part around fields, Honourable, I think this is an area to explore further. Of course, barring resource constraints, because One, as you know, this is a function of local government around licensing, but I think the chair has captured it also very, very well that we are not working as one as government because of those inherent weaknesses between the different spheres and also even across national departments and even across provincial departments. So we are still grappling with this area and certainly we have to explore whether maybe having a centralized cadet or trained personnel that could be available to be then of use to local government in respect of the air quality monitoring stations might be a solution that we need to consider. But it's something that we do not include in our plans currently, but we'll have to think about. Thank you very much, Chair.
Colleagues, you will have another bite. I know it's quite an involved area, and that's why we... and of course, the more we are knowledgeable on the area, the more we ask questions, unfortunately.
For me, I think the question of an appreciation of what happens in terms of the province as far as I'm concerned is important. That question has not been responded to.
Thanks, Honourable. So what we did was we worked with every province to understand what capacity exists within that province, what climate change response capacity exists within that province. So we had a set of questions around obviously human resource capacity, budget availability, links with research institutions, implementation capacity, whether a climate change response plan exists or is included in that provincial departmental APP. And so we can present that, Honourable Chair, if it would be useful. So we had a snapshot as of the end of last year as to what the provincial capacity for dealing with climate change issues actually is or is not. And we recognize that in very few provinces is there a dedicated budget or dedicated personnel. However, at least they are putting provincial climate change response plans or strategies in place. So we are supporting provinces from that standpoint. And then working through MINTEC for a regular update to make sure that we are aware of where improvements are being made or the opposite in the case of budget constraints.
You realize, colleagues, that the questions that we have asked start at coordination at national level. They go to provincial level. They go to cities. They go to municipalities. Hopefully, SR State will have a composite paper. We have rightly pointed out, TG, that there's still a long way to go. Because whatever legislation you put in place, that legislation should be overarching and touching. And that discussion document, not only across departments at national level, across sectors at national level, as your zeros would attest to, but also across spheres of government. And therefore, the sooner we also understand how government works, by the way. You can't bring a document to us when you as the executive have not agreed on. So we have no question about that. What we have a question about is whether it will come. Because we don't want to come, we will be going to many other, you are right, DG, we must ratify the Paris Agreement as this parliament. So if that agreement must come before this parliament, indeed we can ratify it tomorrow, by the way, because we were part of that agreement as this parliament, so we have no problem. And after that, we will then ask you, what are you doing? What is your plan of action? So we are not making your life difficult. But if we don't, indeed our people will not take us serious. We can't be worried about other pollutants when the serious pollutants is not being seriously treated. And that GHG And again, if we can have that inventory, then it is agreed on. We would like to have that inventory, but how you came to have that inventory is another matter for discussion another day. Because you can't have the inventory on the basis of people who want to provide information, who are willing to provide information. And we hope that your regulations on NTT will go a long way to dealing with this anomaly, where industry must be good at heart enough to provide us information. We just hope that NTT will assist us in that regard. Colleagues, can we give you another take, Baba
Makubele,
Baba Shelele, Baba Madilo, Mam Kekana, Mam Yambi, in that order.
Perhaps the order needed to have started the other way around. But it's fine, we'll take it that way. Just to indicate that on the one we asked earlier about skills and expertise and so on, it's not something that we were asking because we are not aware. It's something that we are aware we have been there. We are excited with the situation and we know that we don't have the skills and the expertise. In fact, we were worried when we were there. Every time you want to go to the station, you are introduced to somebody who is not part of the department or government. And you are told, sorry, and so we'll take you through what happens in the station. So we are aware of what we're talking about. The issue is, what are we doing about it? Because that cannot just be left like that forever. At some point, we must break with the current status quo and then say government has capacity to do it. That is the level of local government, province, national. To us, yes, we understand the separation of the national, whatever. But at some point, we deal with government as a whole, so that at least it assists our own service delivery issues. So, but it's fine. I think that we are fine with the response. I'm not saying we need to do a bit more than that. The second part, and you'll bear with me at some point, trying to link up how you presented the other time and what happens now becomes a bit problematic. In that, when you presented about the carbon tax, we did engage. We're saying, you remember when we were asking the controversy even around the carbon tax, why other countries are denouncing that and we seem to be introducing it going forward and so on. But that's not the question now. The issue is, where are we in terms of that? Where are we introduced that now? Obviously, not as yet at the level where people should be dealing with, but just to once more check, to be taken on board quickly to say where are we and so that we are able to understand. But the other is, when you have got high law, and I want to give an example on this one. When you're talking the climate risk and vulnerability assessment and so on, you're talking two provinces, Free State and the Northern Cape. And I can link that to when you talk the 40 municipalities and when you talk the 9 companies, when you talk whatever. It may not specifically be on this, but in most cases, we have a situation where the department comes to us and say we are piloting just to see if it works and so on and so on. Fine. But often we are not told when we intend reaching universal coverage. So in this financial order, in the last financial, and I don't want to go and do that work myself, for example. If I were to go in the past 2-3 financial years to check how many pilots did we have, where are they now? Have now reached, if you piloted with 40 municipalities, I'm just giving this as a number now. I know you couldn't have reached the universal coverage. But the intention should be that if you start with 3 provinces or whatever number, the intention is to reach the 9 at some point. And if you need some municipalities, the intention should be to go to every local government sphere or every corner of the country. Are we able to, at some point, take stock and say, this is the number of pilots who have actually taken through, and now out of all these pilots, this is the number that we have been able to reach out to everybody. It may not be that you need to do it. It may be that you are saying, this is the best practice, let other provinces, let other municipalities learn from, so that at least on their own, what I'm saying, your role may be to facilitate, not because it's a business that you must run to make sure that everybody does it. But where possible, you try and put funds aside and say, let's assist them, so that they know what is expected of them. And I'm just saying, are you able to then say to them, colleagues, whether it's MINMEC, whether it's in your management committee, whatever, are you able to then say, colleagues, we have assisted you? How far are you able to reach out and reach that? I'm just using that one as an example. They're very close. Sorry, if I elaborated more. Yes. Just on the last one, the stakeholder satisfaction on the public participation. What I to cut some of this short now. In the past, we learned that some of these were not going on well because, amongst other things, there were threats to human life. If you remember that, people threatened in these meetings to be killed and so on, and they were fearful to even go on participating and so on. Were we able at some point to resolve that? Can we clearly say that these meetings are now conducive for stakeholder engagement and so on and so on? Or we are still having challenges as the situation worsens or not? I can stop there. No.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I would love if the Chairperson, when you go out for oversight visit, you know, he does give us such an opportunity to speak to the public, because I once requested when we were in that Big Five having the public meeting, I said, can you give me an opportunity to say something? And he said, no, I'm sorry, I can't make a mistake to give you a bad platform. But today, he's getting all of us. I'd love to see that when you go for oversight. We'll see how I talk. Chairperson, I think the good point that was raised about the stakeholder engagement, you see, if what we are saying when it comes to the air quality management in local councils and municipalities, or local council municipalities are forced to make sure that in their control committees there is such, I mean, an issue of, I mean, air quality control, because municipalities are also contributing to that. If you look maybe to their dam sites, you don't care if there is wind, you'll find a truck from the municipality going to the dam site and uploading there. At the same time, the air pollution and the air is polluted. So I would love to see that, because I can tell you we are working hard here. But on the ground where, I mean, we need to see things happening, municipalities and councillors are not aware. I'm saying this because I've been sitting as a councillor, but I noticed that not much is being done there.
So if maybe we can look at that as well, I think it will assist us. I heard you spoke nice about when it comes to climate change, that the issue of the food security. But I didn't hear anything that how do you control members of parliament not to eat much, because we don't know that we may run short of food. So
I think you're out of
order. I'm sorry, but anyway, keep moving and control that, because I can see on table the bones there in front of Nalu Magelo. You see, it could finish, I mean, the meat and those bones. So, maybe straight to the point, I'm worried about what's happening at the local level.
But maybe.
You're okay.
Second.
I'm covered,
sir. Covered by whom? Nambi?
How are we at risk as a water? Because now we're facing 2015. The severe drought that we're facing in South Africa. Is there anything that can come out so that then the other kids, such as Ebola, that can not be spread?
Thank you, colleagues. If we can be short, because we still have two programs to dispense of.
Okay, just to the quick sense, Chair, carbon tax discussion document was published after approval by cabinet. It's led by Treasury. So Treasury now is working on finalizing the public comments, and secondly, then they will go back to cabinet to finalize. We're still going to meet with Treasury to check what in the public comments could cause areas of divergence with our climate mitigation system, because we have said that the carbon tax, our intention is to make sure that it is also an instrument that is aligned with the framework for the mitigation system for the country. On the skills, I think, again, Honourable Chair, we agree with you, we need to do more. However, the complexity of local government, even if we train, we have done this in other areas, not so in air quality, is what they look at. If we have a central scaling program, like we have with the environmental management inspectorate, the uptake, again, is still going to depend on the province or the municipality. They still have to appoint those people. So we may not quite, we can try and influence, but I think we would also be relying on the committee has that, what Indaba had promised, Honourable Chair, that there'd be an engagement where you invite councillors and legislatures and have a debate just on air quality. And that should be able to help us to reinforce what needs to be done at local government level. Even MINEP, they take decisions, but most instances are difficult when we have the challenges with communication on some of the programs. On the pilots, I think Judy, you can add, Chair, we use pilots for different purposes. We do have an intention at times to use pilots to test policy and to have enough evidence to validate what should be in the policy, or at least as regulation evidence for that policy and as best practice. And therefore, as you correctly mentioned, it's not always that we would cover all 200, and I don't know how many municipalities now after the review by the demarcation board. To cover all of those municipalities, because one, normally our resources, it's also dependent mostly in these areas, we've been funding these initiatives through the donor funds more than with the allocated resources. Even the air quality monitoring station, we started that program
setting it up with a lot of the donor funds, because the department cannot have enough resources for some of these. And to a greater extent, we also use that to motivate our funding needs to treasure this evidence that this is what exactly, this is what it would take for us to implement, and when we get allocations, then we can then step up some of the programs. So it serves as modeling in certain instances, and also serves for best practice and also for policy implementation. And we can then assess in the different areas, like we are saying now on the climate risk and vulnerability for the provinces. Each of these provinces is supposed to do this, but we have then modeled what would need to be done, but we may be able to go to the next province if resources are permitting. But that is what I think when we present and discuss our new strategic plan in APP, we can then take you into confidence on what resources we have that could assist us to then step up some of the pilots and get universal or as far as possible that kind of coverage. And then 29, the other one, for instance, on the climate risk, our target that is proposed is that by 2019-20, in the current strategic plan, we should have all the provinces covered, all the nine provinces. Again, we're going to hear now with all the budget cuts, we don't know whether we'd have to revise that target during the strategic end of resources. And then lastly, I think you can also talk about the stakeholder satisfaction around the tracks in respect of the hot spots and those stakeholder engagements, whether that situation has improved or not. And also the Honourable Shengir's question on which share in there. Okay, thank you. So share in there. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'll be very, very quick on the last point. I think, DG, just to add to the question around pilots and upscaling, what we're doing at the moment with sector department and then moving on to with stakeholders is we're putting together a list of programs, basically a pipeline for the Green Climate Fund and for other sources of funding. With, for example, we're going into partnership with the private sector. Because the Green Climate Fund is about transformational change. It deals with emission reduction, it deals with adaptation, it's about technology for transformational change. We need to, together with the sector departments and stakeholders, work out what the major potential programs, climate change response programs are that we would want to put forward, not only for funding through the Green Climate Fund, but through other sources. And it may not necessarily be grant funding, it may be loan funding, or it may be private sector investment. One of the programs that we have really, we are working with the National Business Initiative on, is promoting energy efficiency. Throughout the public sector, but also in within the private sector. We started off with a program that would be donor funded, and I guess we started with a pilot in this case, but we're looking now to upscale that so that we get full coverage across all public sector buildings, retrofitting buildings with the necessary energy efficiency, whether it's correct lighting, correct air conditioning, etc., to maximize and optimize the cost savings, but also emission savings out of retrofitting. And we want to do that together with the private sector so that we're really able to make sure that our building sector, or at least our buildings, are operating with the best energy efficiency possible. On the question of the air quality and the threats that we experienced in one of our stakeholder meetings, and it was at the VAR, it this at the Vaal Triangle stakeholder, priority area stakeholder group. We have subsequently engaged with all the key sectors within the Vaal, and those monthly stakeholder research group meetings are continuing. So we have resolved the concern. The issue really is that in the Vaal Triangle, these air quality stakeholder meetings are pretty much the only stakeholder engagement forums, the regular stakeholder engagement forums that are taking place. So we have these meetings, the MSRG multi-stakeholder reference group meetings quarterly. So people know that there is a forum led by government with stakeholders to engage on the air quality issues, but people bring human settlement issues, water issues, health issues, etc. So we haven't quite resolved that issue. We have the relevant department with us most of the time, but not all of the time. And of course, with local authority elections coming up, it's even more politicized. And people are really even more anxious about getting issues resolved. So, I think that through other strategies such as the dealing with air quality in low-income, dense low-income settlements, that strategy was presented to Cabinet last week for publishing for public comment, and the purpose of that strategy is to get the relevant sector departments around the table. So to get Department of Mineral and Resources because of the dust from my dumps, Department of Health, Department of Human Settlements, Department of Transport, Department of Energy, around the table to deal with air quality issues that are particularly coming from people burning coal for heating or cooking, for example. So I think that will bring the relevant departments much closer to the concerns within those priority areas. I think there were two last questions, Honourable Chair. The one was around health sector issues. That Honourable raised, and that was, I think, in particular the health issues are more pertinent in the context of flood, where you get an array of health problems associated with standing water, and so it's less of an issue around in the context of drought circumstances. But the Department of Health has put a adaptation sector plan together, and I think it would be useful to Honourable Chair, it may be useful to ask these sector departments to come to a session to present the content of their sector plans, because then one could really engage in detail. And I think there was one last one. Yes. Yeah. It is an ongoing challenge. Whether in the equality context, whether in the waste context, in all contexts, it's a real challenge. And I think that we're working with Treasury in respect of the local government allocation to make sure that the critical environmental issues such as waste management, such as air quality management, is prioritized because those have economic and social consequences. It has social consequences. Air quality has a social consequence in terms of the health impact, similar to waste. So I think that those are issues that we're working across the board with.
Thank you, colleagues. Again, I think we have deliberately taken quite some time on this because if we don't get this right, we will not be doing justice to that Section 24B of the Constitution. Program 5, Biodiversity and Conservation.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Looking at Program 5, The first area of work there around conservation and management of ecosystems, which was around increasing percentage of land under conservation, and there were minor delays in quarter two when we looked at transferring funds from to defend parks to facilitate the acquisition of land, and that was done and is now on track, and the acquisition is already on track, and we should be able to meet the annual target in line with that. On the additional stewardship side, we have analyzed the process, and we should be able to have established one additional site by the end of the financial year. Looking at or assessing how effectively managed the state-owned managed protected areas are, we had a target of at least
2.8. So that we're on the same way. What is the stewardship site? So we don't go along, and we don't even understand what you mean. It might be stewardship sit away from unions, right? It might be something to do with unions, you know.
Thank you, Chair. Stewardship sites are conservation areas which are under private ownership, community ownership. Because the government or the state cannot afford to conserve everything that we have to conserve. So they are also critically important biodiversity areas which are under private ownership or under community ownership. So one of our targets is then to increase that land which is under stewardship. So they do invest a lot of money in terms of conservation of these areas, but they do get tax incentives.
In fact, honourable members, the word we want to sort of steward for conservation. I think by practice, and if they then actually demonstrate that and say part of my land or our community's land will be managed as a conservation area, then they contribute to the outcomes. So that's what, and the tax incentives are not yet there. We're still working with pressure to get to incentivize them.
You might be able to get continue.
Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, the other area is now to assess how effectively we manage the state managed protected areas, and our intention was to ensure that at least 87% of our state managed protected areas meet the minimum score in line with the tracking tool that we have with a 67%, and we've been able to achieve 92% on that, so we've exceeded the target in terms of that one. The other area, Chair, was around having biodiversity management plans for the African lion and for the white rhino. Both, those are the annual targets, and both are due actually by the end of the third quarter. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of community-based interventions that will assist us to promote access to natural resources, we have a bushbuck bridge project, which for that project we needed to establish a management unit. And Kruger to Canyon has been identified and approved as the project unit for that, so we've been able to achieve our milestone for that one. We also have what we call the People and Parks conference that we hold every 2 years, where we interact and with our stakeholders to understand what the needs are and how we can effectively conserve and manage our areas. And out of these conferences, we always have resolutions, and our intention is to then ensure in between those 2 years that we implement all the resolutions that came from that, and we were able to then implement the resolutions that we had for the financial year. The other area, Chair, is around the National Biodiversity Economic Development Strategy, and this is the strategy that we were looking at constructing on and getting engagement so that we can have it approved by the end of the financial year. And we have been able to present this to MINMEC and MINTEC, and we got approval for this. On the other area, which was around where we're looking at a number of additional World Heritage sites that we need to nominate, we want our annual target was to have one 5 nominators by the end of the financial year, which we believe we should be able to achieve because we have concluded the, we've collected information and compiled the dossier for that.
Okay, that's one aspect, honourable members, where we are in partnership with COP, not COP, what is the Arts and Culture, and it's the Heritage Agency of Arts and Culture that's doing scientific work in preparation of the dossier. Is the dossier going to be ready in this year? That's, I think, just to be sure.
Actually, we're working on two DG, but the target was to finalize one. We've already submitted the common ten one to UNESCO for consideration.
Now, Chair, in the next slide, where we're looking at now benefit sharing agreements in line with our values respecting priorities, we are looking at finalizing 5 agreements by the end of the financial year. We have concluded these agreements and we have submitted them for approval. So if we do get approval, we should be able to meet the annual target. Now, in line with our wildlife economy vision, our intention was to establish 10 sustainable natural resource-based enterprises. We have developed plans, draft business plans for the draft, for the 10 enterprises that we're looking at finalizing, and we are hopeful that by the end of the financial year we should meet the annual target. That is set. Next slide, which is around now the research that we wanted to do, the elephant research that we wanted to do in one focus area. Our intention here was to use an existing MOU with Nelson Mandela University to do the research for us, but I think when we looked at the review of internal supply chain management, the advice was that we need to then do a new MOA, Memorandum of Agreement, with them, and we, so there was a slight delay in that, but that has now been done, and the work has been commissioned already, so they started with the research, so we should be able to attain the annual target on that one. The other area, Chair, around the science-based policy recommendations that we want to finalize, we have done workshops as planned, and we will be able to achieve our annual target as well. And overall, for the program, there was only that one area where there was a slight delay in terms of the research that has already been commissioned. Otherwise, all the targets were met. On program 7,
program 7 is called Chemicals and Waste Management. Continue.
Okay, thank you. I was just taking sure that everyone has found the right pages. Okay. In terms of that program, the first objective we're looking at is still around threats to environmental quality and integrity. We wanted to review our industry waste management plans. We did get the draft comments, and we have been able to then do a response document for that just sent. In relation to recycling, where we wanted to have 25% of waste tires being recycled, we have been able to recycle 42% by the end of the third quarter. Okay. Okay, in terms of licensing, I think we can still read the license. Okay. Next slide, where we're looking at a number of chemicals and waste management instruments developed. We wanted to do the National Implementation Plan for Stockholm Convention. We needed to update that and finalize that. There were slight delays in terms of consultation processes that we undertook, and therefore we did not finalize the action plan by the end of the third quarter, but we have subsequently finalized that now in the fourth quarter, so that was a slight delay on that one. On the PCB phase-out plan, can I just simply say that's the organic chemical that we find in plastic. So we needed to look at a phase-out plan for that. We have drafted the phase-out plan. We had not commenced with the consultations at the end of the third quarter, which was what we had targeted or planned to do, but the consultations have subsequently commenced. In terms of the study on the impact of Minamata Convention, where we wanted to do the draft convention impact study, by the end of the third quarter, all we were able to do was to finalize the first level agreement for the study to be conducted then, but it hasn't commenced in the fourth quarter, and we should be able to achieve our annual target in that regard as well. On the waste management facilities that we ordered, we wanted to do 5 audits, the quarter, which meant 15 audits all in all. We were able to do the 5 audits that we plan to do by the third quarter. On now asbestos, on hectares of asbestos contaminated lead that we remediate, by the third quarter, we wanted to develop the bill of quantities and appoint an appointment of implementing agent. The appointment of an implementing agent was not done, and this was in the main due to the financial constraints that we had, and we had to reprioritize some of the work here, and I think we have a new approach now to work with expanded public works program to look at the funding so that we can fund the program so that it continues. But as it is with the annual target, we will still not be able to attain the annual target in this regard. And I think we're looking at reviewing it even going further in terms of, but we're not going to be rehabilitated the hectares. That's what we were saying. Yeah. In terms of processing of HCSC import and export permits, I think I wrote it in full, but just in simple terms, this is yeah. In simple terms, this is your the gas that you're using for refrigerants and fridges and so on. And for us here, we wanted to then process those permits, and we were able to then process them, and we should be able to achieve our target of having 10% done because we've met that already. Moving on to the next slide, where we're looking at jobs within the waste sector. Our target for quarter three was to have 200 jobs, but our annual target was 576 jobs. So while it looks like we didn't meet the quarter three target, we only had 124. Cumulatively, when we look at our progress from quarter one, we already exceeded the annual target because we have 1,147 jobs that we've already created. In terms of enterprises that we are going to establish, we looked at having 20 for the year, 5 were for quarter three. We did 4 for quarter 3, but cumulatively we already exceeded the annual target in that we already have 22 enterprises that are established. Overall, then, there is 7 targets that we met, 3 targets which I spoke to where work is in progress, we didn't fully meet, and then there is the one area on the 2 hectares of remediated land that we did not meet the target and indicate that we will meet the annual target on.
Let's the oil is in the court. Just one thing before we allow colleagues to comment. Chemicals and waste management. One issue that we are, that is devilling us, at the illegal landfill sites in municipalities. And indeed we might have whatever target of regularizing them, but once they are illegal, there are all sorts of health impacts on our communities. How do we broadly, not necessarily in terms of what numbers you can afford, because that is dependent on the budget and everything. How do we manage this? Well, what is our way of managing and monitoring that? You know, I was just passing my own township yesterday. As you come into the township, there's just Mputumfu. I don't really know what Mputumfu is. But the name says it all. And there are flies. There are dead animals there. What? Mosquitoes. You have everything in that corner. And of course, there is also a human settlement next to this illegal landfill that is not even created by the municipality. It's created by the residents. Now, how do we deal with those? I might be talking about just one when there are so many throughout the country. That's a principle of dealing with those so that we reduce the health impact on our people. Colleagues, any takers on both the programs, biodiversity and the chemicals? Mamu Nambi, Babushalembe, yeah.
By issue of subsidizations, as much as we appreciate that it saves space, but we must have a glossary where we can get the full names, because when alone it becomes very, very problematic that you understand what they are talking about. But in some cases they are in full. The second question is that it is commendable that the department is focusing on community-based natural resource management initiatives like the one in Bushbuckers and the biodiversity and conservation. Are we doing the same for coastal communities like, for instance, in Tiskama? If we are doing so, can you, can the department explain what is happening there or in any other coastal community? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to appreciate the jobs that have been created. The 576, the target. But I just want to know, since these people are going to be on a waste management, how do you ensure the department that the safety equipment to be used by these employees when performing their duties? Who is monitoring that it is happening? Because there are some employees that use equipment, especially cleaning the yard of other people in the area, and you don't know who is responsible for their risk at the end of the day if these employees are expected to work in a private home with the uniform of the government. So now I'm looking at the risk, because you see them working there without any safety equipment, wearing like, you know. But I appreciate the job, but if you can, I mean, explain that to me. And I want also to emphasize, as the chair has said, when it comes to the issue of this illegal dumping, or because we have the Department of Culture, who is responsible to ensure that the refuse removal is controlled by the public. So now maybe that's why I said the engagement of these other stakeholders seems to be creating the difficulty in our department to ensure that the waste environmental issues are controlled. Maybe you can help me on that one. Thank you.
Any other takers, Madam?
No, yes, Madam.
Just on Program 7, the, in
know the progress that is being made, and especially around the targets being met. We appreciate the program that, I mean, the progress that we have seen, especially around the tires. You know, in the past we were concerned around the tires that are lying around in the areas. But if 42% of them recycled, it's a step in the right direction. So with regard to program sale chemicals and waste, it's just that comment. Now, in terms of the waste, I mean, the wildlife economy, the biodiversity, your target for enterprise is 10 per annum, which means that now there's no one. The other 10 are trapped for business enterprise. Can you elaborate more, which means you have not met a single target? That's the first thing. Secondly, you know this committee of ours has been seized with the question of the wildlife economy, your vision in 2024. But we've always said that with the ocean economy, we have seen that this operation PISA has been launched, is operational in different phases. Where are we with the question of the wildlife economy, which is still untransformed? And it's going to be a game changer once he rolls out. But why is there a snail pace in accelerating the wildlife economy in the country? Yeah, basically the closer with the two. Thank you.
Ms. Fedra?
Thank you, Chair. I just quickly want to find out, I remember last year we were working on specifically the landfill sites that weren't licensed. I don't know if I'm reading it right, but I just want to quickly find out how many of these functioning landfill sites are still unlicensed, and where the department has found that maybe some of these unlicensed sites are growing, you know, the number. Are they increasing? Are we kind of handling it? I know it's a municipal function, just for interest sake.
Ma'am,
Gagan.
Well, thank you, Chair. Why should we aim for go above 67%. Why not 100%? Thank you, Chair.
Image as well. The okay, I let allow you to answer.
I'm sure from my colleague.
Sir, just two issues around the chemicals and waste. The one from the first slide is green there. And the shows this that you performed very well, particularly on the percentage increase in waste targeted from landfills, say from 35% of the waste of tires to 42% that has been diverted. The question is a legal one. Was 35% a reasonable target, or it was far less? You know that we needed a green guarantee. I look not about performance bonus, but why is it not? Well, it's almost 50%. You know, in fact, you are going to exceed it by 100%. We nearly got to 50%. You know, it's not really understandable how you could have measured your. And the next thing, almost you outsmarted yourself in such a way. Big time. You know, I think you are still surprised as you present here how you achieved this. But let's get on the same. Was it not just way too low? The second one, with regard to the asbestos hackers, this was presented to us some time back. I remember very well, still very vivid in my mind, in terms of the project, the school in the Northern Cape, many other things. I still remember that presentation very well. But my question here is maybe in two parts. One, just to remind ourselves once more the overall coverage about this asbestos area of land that has been contaminated nationally. Do we still have that, by the way, or is something that we're still working on? And the time range, I know at the time that you presented, the funding that you needed was a lot. We may not even achieve. Now with the performance of the rand and the economy generally, I'm afraid to ask this question, where shall we be? It's like we may not even be able to deal with this issue. You know, what are you telling us? Other than just that challenge of the approach and so on, can we project now new time frames in terms of how do we think we'll be able to deal with this issue, decontamination nationally and so on? Because it's something that is an issue to our people, seriously, it's not something. It's something we just have to deal with. It can't be postponed forever, but the resources permitting. But somewhat, we must just find those resources. Whether it's something else, whether it's donor funding, whether it's whatever, investment by the private sector, whatever, we need to mobilize those resources to deal with that issue. And just in talk to it, in a sense that gives hope, let's understand. What is it that you are doing? If it's red like that, it just shows that we may be, I don't know whether there will still be more red than this one. And that's in the major problem. We are not putting much effort, or it does not seem like we're putting much effort to deal with it. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair, DG, honourable members. Let me start with the better news. I think generally our strategy is to underpromise and overdeliver. So that's a long target. The issue here is this target refers specifically to the tire target. And when we started about 2 years ago, there was some uncertainty in terms of starting with the venue waste stream. It was the first industry management plan for the country, and we were really not too sure about, you know, what would be the level of achievement. It was the first time South Africa had embarked on such a plan in terms of something that was bound by law and with a levy that was paid by industry and so forth. So we worked off a kind of zero base, and so we had the target 25%. We were kind of surprised ourselves, I think, but it's worked so well that we would be able to achieve 100%, I think, in the next 3 years of the plan. So while we don't put 100%, you know, we are saying to you now that is a level of comfort that we do have. So I think going forward, we would definitely want to revise the targets in the other years. We have discussed it with our performance unit already. I think it would be something that's reasonable. So moving on, in terms of Honorable Makavela's concern around asbestos, and we do agree it does be a concern, but allow us to share with you some good news. I mean, given the current economic climate and budget cuts and all of that, last year we made a detailed presentation through the NTEC process at Treasury, and they have allocated a budget for asbestos, but only from 2017-18 financial year onwards. and there's a five-year program with a total of about 120 million that's been allocated in portions over 5 years from 17-18 financial year. And you know, nowhere comes near to the budget in terms of the second year's versus remediation plan. That there, the plan was calculated as something like 10.2 billion that would be required for total remediation of all the electricity that's contaminated around the country. But Chair, we have been looking at other ways of funding. We've looked at the triple P model. We're looking at donor funding. We've submitted applications to international donor organizations. We're working through our own DFIs, PBSA and IBC and so forth. And there's hope there in terms of how we can, work something out there. The issue here is that, like with other kind of triple P programs, there's a revenue stream. There's money to be made from through triple P now, and on cleanup, there's no money to be made from a private sector coming in, unless we start looking at some type of regulations and so forth. So we're looking at some creative ways here of remediation, super fund type of thing for South Africa that's very similar to the US EPA super fund for pollution. And we're kind of pioneering that, but it's early days now. I think we'll get that right in the next 2 years or so. So moving on then to landfill sites, and just to give you the statistics, 3 years ago we started off with a total of 341 illegal landfill sites found across the country. We reduced that last year to 57, and by the end of this financial year, we had cleared that 341 totally. The issue here is that these illegal sites come up every year. And, we work with the provinces, we get a number from each province, we work toward the target. In the mid-year, we get one province asking, but you know what, you didn't come this side, you didn't come that side. So these sites develop all the time. So what we do is that we do an annual survey to look at, what sites have come up. But at the same time, there is an issue of an illegal site. There's an issue of, this illegal site being housed in the dump, where people just dump, and it must be closed, and it's not in the right place. Then there are the issue of unlicensed sites, where municipalities have a battle with funding and so forth to license the sites. So on illegal sites, and this general way being a mandate of local governments, the provinces, through their own enforcement teams and their own green scorpions and so forth, needed to take on the issue of monitoring, compliance and enforcement. But we know that does not happen. And, where we do blitzes jointly between the National Department and provinces, we do look into landfill sites and enforcement issues there. Once again, Chair, it remains the mandate of local government. It are constitutional issues here. But we do have programs where we are constantly doing training and awareness at local government level. We are very involved with COPTA's interministerial program and the Back to Basics program to really get the awareness and the profile of this matter, raised at the highest level. And so we're getting some progress there. But again, it's a matter of capacity. There's a funding issue. There's a big story around waste management prioritization at a local government level. Then, Honourable Salemba, I think in terms of the same issue, on the safety side, that matter that you were talking to really was around tyre collection, that statistic. So I get your point around safety and protective wear and all of that. And our programs with the local government, where we do training and awareness, we do focus on these aspects. But where we can heighten the awareness around safety of working with waste, we will continue to address that. Honourable Edwards, I think I've answered to some extent your question. But as I said, we do pick up from time to time that there are illegal sites that are developing. But safe to say that we've reduced and cleared the 341 backlog completely by the end of this financial year. I think I've handled most of those, and we take the compliments from Honorable Mabila, obviously. Thank you.
Thank you. I will start with a question on wildlife economy from Honorable Mabilo. We have indeed been working with the provinces and some parks in terms of facilitating a game donation, for example, to communities residing around national parks as well as other forms of protected areas. So that work is ongoing. However, we have had to be structured in the way in which we do business while we're still finalizing the strategy, which should be approved soon. We have also been working with some of the key government departments, like for instance the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So what we have done now in this new financial year is to identify a set of projects, which is the 10 projects, but also in the, at the same time secure funding, which we now have from both our department as well as the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We have also been training some of these communities so that they can establish their own businesses. So that's where now the question of the business plans comes in, because we need to make sure that they do develop viable business enterprises. So we have really gone a long way in terms of achieving that. While we are finalizing the strategy, we are also looking at an ocean, sorry, Operation Pakistan kind of arrangement now for biodiversity economy, and we will be going into that lab during the month of March. We have also been working, I'm sure DG can talk to that, we have also been working with the Department of Tourism, National Department of Tourism, and they have committed to come on board fully in terms of the Operation Pakistan. So soon we will have a clear plan, timeline, as well as responsibilities, which will upscale the work that we do in this space. In respect of management effectiveness, we have developed this tool, which is called the management effectiveness tracking tool. Because what was then happened previously is that if you have protected areas which do not need to have basic management or on the ground, so we had to develop a tool which comprises of about 33 indicators that look at whether you have basic management capacity on the ground in terms of your conservation management, how are you faring in terms of finances, in terms of working with your local neighbors, your communities, and other stakeholders. So we started from a point where things were bad. And in terms of this tool, it's got three categories. If you go from 0 to 33, you're like in ICU. And if you go from 33% to 67%, you are still in hospital. There are significant deficiencies. However, if you score above 67, it means your management is acceptable, although there could still be areas for further improvement. So that's why we use 67% as an indicator that your protected areas are well managed. We are continuously, of course, trying to perfect the system. We've done well, I think, in this reporting period. As we perfect the system and we've refined the tools, we might find that our scores might go down in the next reporting period. But that perfecting of the system is also key to make sure that we leave most of it intact. I'm sure DG will respond to the question.
Thanks, honourable members. Just the one matter related to the work, the coast, how we're working with coastal communities. When we presented program 3, we did reflect on progress, particularly in respect of the ocean economy, that there are programs that are focusing on aquaculture, which is going to be community, encourage community participation on the sites that are selected. Also on water quality monitoring, we have an approach that seeks to absorb the young people who have certain, who are unemployed and with some qualifications, because we need to be setting up laboratories to make sure that when we monitor the quality of water that goes into the sea, at least in the coastal area or the beach area. We do also have a program which is focusing on coast care or care for the coast, which is referred to as working for the coast. And even within that, we're looking at the partnership with tourism around some kind of coast guard that would enhance tourism, both from a security point of view along the coast, but also with our environmental function of water quality monitoring and also maintaining the international standards in respect of blue flag beaches. So those are the areas and opportunities that we have on participation of communities. But more than that, there's also the work on harbour that is led by the Department of Public Works, which again is seeking to refurbish and improve the harbour infrastructure and local economic development in the 12 proclaimed efficient harbours. But more than that, also some new harbours that are still to be declared in the Northern Cape, in Eastern Cape, I think Northern Cape is Bokubai, and then Eastern Cape, Port St. John's, and KZN and Hebergen. So those are the initiatives that we can present, and I think in line with the chair's summary last time when we were presenting, is that we want as a committee to visit the oceans and coast bands just to understand their work, because it's technical, but also they are opportunities for participation of the communities that they are along the coast. Thank you very much.
Did you? I know that the DDC did touch on this matter that I'm going to raise now. But where are we 21 years down the line? I mean, all those times. You are sure that there's something before cabinet. Now, I don't think that something will come before cabinet 21 years after our people have been subjected to these chemicals, that Highfeld, which is now Elspa, and the other gold mine, have left on the doorstep of Portugal. Everywhere in the country. And indeed, if we can just have a sense, broadly speaking, where are we in relation to this government? We know that from some department there is an initiative to recoup whatever minerals that are still, or whatever gold that is still there in the gold dumps. Now, there's nobody doing something on the coal dumps as far as we are aware. And our people continue to be subjected to this waste that comes to their lungs, that messes up with their health. And of course, we then have to pay at the state by taking them to our hospitals, by taking our people to the various things, but there are statistics that come from some international NGOs that says over 7 million people are killed annually by this death that comes from these dumps. Where are we? What are we doing?
And thanks, Honorable Chair. What I think I can comment is that we come to the committee with DMR, Department of Mineral Resources, because all the mine dumps that are ownerless and derelict are now, there is some funding for them to be rehabilitated, but it's not going far enough.
Our ministers had a discussion during government report that this is one of the areas where we should look at enhanced job opportunities for job creation, but also dealing with the environmental problem. And we were still, the minister now, see that they say after the meeting, they had the ministerial meeting, she's going to have the bilateral with the minister of DMR. Because the approach should be that we can at least agree with DMR on how it should be done and what to prioritize and work together on a program, including what we are doing in respect of the asbestos secondary pollution, because again you could classify that also as some kind of pollution that happened because there were the regulation of the legislation at the time did not quite control the matter of asbestos. So the future, at least there is a rehabilitation plan, and in respect of the legislation, the department is busy with the regulations around mine closure, or is it called financial, is it financial closure regulations. So there we are setting norms also and standards for rehabilitation of new of the existing mines, but the old mine dams are still a real problem, and I can say that we are working on a plan to deal with them, and we can report them maybe in next quarter to the committee, or if we are invited jointly, we can then have that discussion jointly. But it's a matter that we will definitely include for reporting in future. Thank you.
Colleagues, any follow-ups? If there's none, we then continue. One of the issues that we wanted to look at, DG, in this day was we got the state of the national address. We will not touch on the finances because we'll have a process. We'll have a process of approving your allocation. We know that we have a serious cut in it, like all of us, including Parliament. That's why we no longer have food. In fact, when we finish here, we must finish early so that you go and grab some food somewhere in a fish and chip shop. Now, we no longer get food. It's not because we are cut. All monies that we have in our fiscal will go towards our people. And therefore, we will not touch on those. We will touch on your finances when we deal with your ATPs. Where have you cut? Where have you cut? And you better have an impact on the frontline service delivery that we need. What we are then interested in today is the broad politics that the president instructed us to do. What is pertinent for the Department of Environmental Affairs? So that as we deal with these issues, we are also, as we deal with your budget, we are also able at the back of our head to say what were the instructions from the president through the State of the Nation address. What are the pertinent issues with regard to this department that emanates from SONA?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. There is a document that has SONA analysis. That's the presentation that was submitted. We've attempted to analyze in broad terms what the President presented at SONA, and then asked what then is the relevance to the work of the department. And this is what we will also, during the workshop, outline in more detail how the ATP responds to those areas. The President spoke to the matter that relates to state-owned enterprises and public entities. Based on the presidential review report, which stated recommendations on what needs to be done in respect of the existing public entities
Honourable members, there are more than 700 entities of the state. If you look at national, provincial, and even local government, and the problem statement in that report that was teased out broadly was that there are areas where we have duplication, and also there are areas where we did not, after 1994, assess whether those entities are still relevant for the development agenda of the state. And basically, then the recommendations are about then the process of both streamlining and improving governance, at the same time also phasing out some of the other functions that are no longer relevant, or even begin to then amalgamate some of the institutions where it is necessary. In the case of the environment sector, we have undertaken a process. As Kumsa, when he was talking about the effectiveness study, when we were talking about the, what was that target, 57% in terms of management effectiveness. What we did, we said all the conservation agencies in the country must be benchmarked on the same basis. We looked at functionality, whether they are relevant, what they contribute to conservation, and also what the governance and capacity is with each of the entities. And based on that, the ministers and the MINEC and the MECs then had to assess whether one we could improve on functionality, and then decide whether in future we would want to then have what is called a presidential, what was the proposal, a commission, because in terms of interest, the minister has an interest, MECs would accept that she wants to have all of them or nationalize all the entities that are run by provinces. So you need to run an independent process to then arrive at whether you then cancel or close down some of the provincial agencies and keep the national agencies, or where maybe in some instances, for instance, the Northern Cape has got no conservation agency, Honourable Mabiru would know better, but their protected areas are so far flung. There are 7 protected areas that are far from each other. You travel, hours to get to that protected area. So the management thereof would not make sense to be national, for instance, in the case of those. But Sandparks, for instance, has got a protected area there, which is Rasta's Right, which is linking to one of the biomes and one of the conservation areas. The question is, what is the best functional model that we can look at, and what can be shared between Sandparks and the provincial agents? So what then we are saying in respect of that area, as a department, the work that initiated, there is already a review also of the 4 entities that we present to this committee. And in that, we have the minister has looked at the macro governance review, and at this point in time, we have not quite confirmed a record of overlaps in mandates. But there are similarities where we can align, for instance, with Mangali, so with Sandparks, and then, but weather services is business from Sandy. So there is no duplication in that regard. But there are functions in Sandparks that relate to research, which we could review whether then that research work should be undertaken at Sandparks or it could be on the Sandy. So on governments, I think the key recommendation to the minister now, which he must analyze with the boards of the entities, is streamlining governance so that one, there is no wastage. And the issues around also salary benchmarking, bonuses, and all those can be limited so that we don't have an undue wastage. So we will be able to have a target on our ACP around what the next steps are in respect of that. Then the next one was on domestic tourism. Here, as again, the relevance to the work of environmental affairs is when it relates to, it's the focus on domestic tourism. Our interest is more around the fact that we are mostly the owners of the ecotourism products. Okay. So Sandpark or Isimangaliso or even Sandy with the gardens, the botanical gardens, and even some of the provincial agencies contribute to that. And therefore we would have to then look at what are the gaps that could limit the advancement of the of that domestic tourism strategy implementation. And therefore, also with some of the environmental weather, extreme weather events like the drought, what is then the response that we should have so that while even if, for instance, we have lodges in those reserves, there is water availability, otherwise you may compromise the appreciation of the product by the visitors that are paying. And then the next one is the Operation Hydrate, which is again about health management. The president there has outlined the fact that there has been a declaration of disaster management areas or disaster areas in four provinces, and in particular the impacts on agriculture and water, and some assistance to farmers, both in terms of water provision, but also in terms of funding flows that would be made available by the state institutions. So our responses here, yeah, we do have to implement the biodiversity sector climate change response strategy. Again, we're saying that both the issues of water and agriculture are also about the ecosystem services, because biodiversity is about making sure that if we conserve our ecosystem, then there would be a viable, at least wetlands that can help to a greater extent with water availability and filtration or management of water in respect of the quality. And the National Action Program on Combating Land Degradation is one ecosystem intervention that would advance also as part of our one of the conventions, the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, the Climate Change Adaptation Plans for South African Biomes, and the National Disaster Management Act. So we would respond, our inundation plans would respond to those frameworks. And then the next slide then talks to the work that is being undertaken intergovernmentally, and that's too small for honourable members to see, but in your document you can then see that we've outlined from the National Joint Drought Coordination Committee what each sector department is focusing on, both in terms of actions. We've got the water and sanitation, we've got agriculture, forestry and fisheries, rural development, and then environmental affairs. And then the next slide then also refers to the work, the information that we get from the South African Weather Service, is that the current heat wave is still resulting, or what is referred to as El Nino, is resulting in a below normal rain situation, and that is still expected to persist for the remainder of the summer season, and virtually the entire country is at high risk of likelihood of the occurrence of warmer than normal temperatures. So it then says, because it was a report that was prepared a week ago, covering what was then the projection that week of the 15th to the 23rd of February, and what in the end of February. So there is an expectation of isolated heavy rain and severe thunderstorm events that may still occur, and that has happened to a small extent, but it could still then be something that we can expect as a typical occurrence during the El Nino period. Then on the strategic policy considerations, we have implementation of robust and integrated monitoring systems. We would look at advancing our early warning systems particularly to mitigate the projected increase of extreme events and support effective disaster risk reduction. And that's what the work of the Weather Service relates to, improving an understanding of water, food and health nexus and associated trade-offs. Judy has already spoken to that earlier on in her presentation, and expanding the initiatives such as the maintenance of the ecological infrastructure. We're talking here about the work on invasive alien land control, rehabilitation of landscapes, and also what is called soil reclamation activities. Increasing and maintaining climate resilience into infrastructure and operational design, building robust infrastructure, and with an understanding of long-term effects or impacts versus short-term costs and benefits, increasing education capacity building as a cornerstone of adaptation responses, and coordination at all levels of government, both horizontally and vertically, that is, both across provinces and also across national departments. We would want to also make sure that we continue to invest in further research into climatic impacts at a local level and across industrial chains, explore innovative financing models to support and deliver on appropriate adaptation responses. The next slide, honourable members, then outline again what each of the departments that are participating and also including the provinces, and what then as environmental affairs we are responsible for. I already mentioned our work in coordinating and management of invasive alien plants and for water security. As we clear invasives, honourable members, it is the water runoff does improve. So because some of the species have got negative, they use more water and they have transpiration because of their extended root systems, and it helps when we actually advance our work on removing invasives, especially in water catchment areas. Working on fire, again, managing felt fires and felt and forest fires. In this case here, there are biomes that need for fire from time to time so that we are able to enhance the functionality of those ecosystems, and also making sure that the fire breaks and protect homes and families from wildfires. Working for ecosystems, which is about the work on rehabilitation. Agriculture has outlined what are the key programmatic areas, including exploration of a use of genetic modified processes, for instance, for maize that is not as water. They don't, when they grow, they don't actually use a lot of water, and reduce unsustainable land management practices. The water sector has outlined each program around protecting water allocations for the poor and marginalized communities, ensuring that the dams have clear routine operating rules in respect of where they must be limited in respect of what is run out of those dams, because they're already sitting at levels of around 50% compared to normally where they have levels of around 80%. And there is a greater impetus on the work around water demand management and improving water efficiency in public buildings, in hospitals, at homes, and also in the private sector. There is also a clear plan to make sure that there is water tanks for storage purposes, so that families also practice capturing rainwater and harvesting it when it is when the rain opportunity comes. Human settlements has got a clear program. Biodiversity sector already mentioned, and then the disaster risk reduction program, and mainstreaming disaster reduction into policy and planning for all sectors, including taking the opportunity that we have the Land Use Management Act that is being implemented as part of the special planning within local government. And the next slide then talks more to the Working for Water program
and working on fire program, which you honorable members are already aware of. In the short term, there is a reprioritization of work that focus on invaded riparian zones or at least water catchment areas, that is to facilitate needed water relief in the ecosystem, but at the same time there is an emphasis on the long term change. On fire, we have again, I've already outlined that we have a major program that is looking at wildfires as a major factor that requires fire-prone ecosystems to be managed effectively, and we will use our budget allocations to then fund that that work. However, the drought is bound to lead to serious challenges in the fire seasons in the south, particularly during the summer period, and potentially in the north in the next winter. So those are the plans that we will then try and make sure that we are responsive, and of course, even now with budget cuts, we may not be able to. Our target was about 6,000. What? How many fires that we're going to? 3,000 wildfires that we're going to control in this financial year, and then there are 6,000 highly trained firefighters that will work on this program in this year, and certainly then they will continue in the next financial year, assuming that our resources would allow for such. The wetlands program, I indicated that it's more about the quality of water, and in simple language, our wetlands are referred to naturally in kidneys, where you, in your body, if your kidneys are not functioning, you're going to poison your whole body, and in this case they function as filtration and purification systems that are necessary in our ecosystems, and we do have a wetland program, and we have land management program, and the last next slide where we're talking then that there is no choice of water, we need to adapt or die, and Guy has given us some good counsel or wise counsel that the good thing is that it is a profitable thing to do if we adapt to these extreme water scarcity events. South Africa is a country that is in the arid region, and we need to adapt to climate change, and we should be expecting various impacts, including in respect of water shortages. And therefore, there is a greater need for us to invest in land management options, and there are technological solutions that are available for shower heads, for flushing our toilets and so on, in a manner that we use as much as little water as possible and avoid leakage. And South Africa has generally, in terms of lifestyles, we are a throwaway country in terms of waste, and on water, we tend to use a lot of water. We don't know how to think about that, the fact that every drop of water should be counted, and there are people that still have not even got access to water, and those of us that have access need to really manage it as efficiently as possible. Next slide. The next areas that of SONA, the President spoke to the revitalization of distressed mining towns, and again, as the department, we would focus on particularly the area that is closer to South African National Parks, the Phalaborwa area in Limpopo, in order to contribute to destination development in respect of the northern section of the Kruger Park. This is aimed at creating an alternative economy with employment and entrepreneurial opportunities for distressed mining towns in that area. Again, this is in the context of the biodiversity economy or wildlife economy, and maybe other aspects of work that we would undertake in the mining towns. We've been working on those details. The next slide, honourable members, also talk to the 9-point plan. The President outlined the fact that as cabinet, the decision was taken last year to focus on the nine areas, which one is revitalizing agriculture and agro-processing value chain, advanced beneficiation, that is adding value to mineral wealth, in the light of the fact that most of the commodities are no longer searching and the prices are too low, whether you're talking platinum or even coal or even some of the other minerals, and therefore there is more value in us in setting up industries for beneficiation and therefore localization as far as possible. Implementation of the more effective industry policy action plan, that is what is referred to as IPEP. Again, here, this is an area where the country is seeking to industrialize, and there are areas which have been proclaimed as special economic zones, both along the coast and also inland, and those are some of the areas that are also part of the presidential infrastructure program. Unlocking SMMEs, co-ops, townships, and rural enterprises, and then resolving the energy challenge, especially in the context also of our climate change response policy, and the opportunity for scaling up renewable energy sources, crowding in private sector investment, cross-cutting areas are then the areas of science and innovation, water and sanitation infrastructure, transport infrastructure and broadband rollout, and then the ninth area being the growing of the oceans economy, including the coastal tourism. Honourable members, then I would run quickly the next slide. That map just shows how the Department of Environmental Affairs responds to the 9-point plan. So if you were to go to each of those small bubbles, you will then get the information on what are we investing in that area. So this is just a special representation. It looks like a very busy map, but in essence, that is the work of the department in the country in responding to advancing both strengthening the ecosystem services so that the economy can grow, but also at the same time facilitating other initiatives. The corridors, for instance, for renewable energy, we have done a strategic environmental assessment recently to then say where these are the areas where we can grow and we can at least get an investment for renewables. And two, then the transmission line corridors also would go through in, could be taken through those specified areas without taking a long time as we normally have in terms of the authorization processes. The part that along the coast, you can see the blocks, also leads to some of the areas that we would have marine protected areas, those blue areas, and then they are also alongside some of the areas that are earmarked by DMR for mining or at least for exploration of oil and gas. Next slide. We then say in each of the 9-point plan, in revitalizing agriculture, there is a role that the weather services contributes in coalition and services, both for adaptation but also for decision making. And then the biodiversity sector on bioprospecting, we talk about here promoting industry compliance and making sure that benefits that are derived from licensing on biotrade projects. For instance, if you allow, we permit a company to trade on ALU and ALU products, then the communities who have also contributed indigenous knowledge should be able to benefit. And that's what we plan to still take on board in future. And then we hope that we can triple the number of products that could be available for domestic and international markets. We would upscale cultivation of bioprospecting ingredients in at least in an area of about 500 hectares per annum. So we have done this per each area, and the next map. Okay. No, there was a lot before that, but it was not the same. Yeah, maybe it's not. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it was basic. Here we are outlining where we have botanical gardens and where we have implemented projects around that, which are funded through the adaptation fund, and also areas where we're dealing with some of the chemicals like HCFCs, and also some of the air quality monitoring stations. So again, that's another big map, and all the projects that we fund through the EPWP program, whether for greens and open space management, and the other working for programs. Next slide. Here we're talking then around advancing beneficiation. Our interest here, or our contribution as a department, would be the finalization of the mining and biodiversity screening application, so that, again, where we talk sustainability, the areas where there could be coexistence of activities, that should be facilitated, but where you have sensitive environments, which mining should be discouraged, that screening tool would then assist us with proactive decision-making. And improve the information that would also be used by DMR for purposes of improving environmental protection. Next slide. This is where on industrialization we are then talking about our contribution to, in terms of waste management. We can both contribute to SMEs and enterprise development, but also recycling. If we have technologies, and there could be industrial development in respect of managing the different waste streams, taking lessons from the tire recycling initiative and getting on that with the concomitant job creation. Next slide. The Minister Winnek took a decision last year that we must explore a business model for at least an existence of, facilitate an existence of at least two recycling companies in each province, on the basis that you would then look at empowered entities that would be involved both in waste collection, recycling, energy recovery and transfer, material transfer recovery, and also landfill site management. So that's more or less what that slide, that this slide demonstrates. Next slide. Next slide. Yeah, then again there's a map next, and that map again still reflects some of the waste investment, waste projects, in respect of our work as a department in support of municipalities, the island sites that we have funded to build properly with proper licensing, and also there are waste transfer stations that have been developed, and also some of the private centers. Next slide, SME empowerment, and this is again, we say around the SMEs would respond through empowerment of SMEs using the green economy or the implementation of the green economy strategy, and also capitalize on the SMEs that are used in the programs or projects that are funded through the Green Fund. Next slide. On wildlife economy, again, we can increase participation of SMEs, co-ops, and township and rural enterprises. Again, this is work that we were reporting on still underway, and therefore we can advance this work going forward. Resolving the energy challenge, we have already undertaken a strategic environmental assessment, as I indicated, for renewable energy development zones, and also to then simplify the environmental impact assessment to enable investment and therefore attract private sector participation. So our days in respect of the simplification of the process, we're looking at protocols that
would be agreed to between departments, because in an area you might find that there's an AIA required, but also there must be a permit that's released by land affairs or any of the other departments, transport and so on, including the Department of Energy, and limiting and having these kinds of specific site protocols. We would then agree that those applications would be dealt with together in unison and be able to reduce them to about 147 days. We have then the proposal that had already gone to Cabinet. Cabinet approved for publication the renewable energy development zones and electrical corridors for transmission lines. And then we would then say the impact and the outcome that we are looking for is reducing regulatory burden, but also ensuring that there is a green energy and it that would contribute to energy security into the future. Next slide. Okay, that slide, honourable members, again is reflecting on what has been achieved through the Independent Power Producer Procurement Program, the IRP, and that in those applications that have been processed by the Department of Energy, as the Department of Environmental Affairs, we processed about 1,219 environmental impact assessment applications for all the rounds, and that is up to round 4 of the bidding process. And we then, on that, we outlined what the investment was. There have been 8 preferred bidders for round 1 with about 1,400 megawatts and a project cost of over 23 million. 21 preferred bidders, round 3, 17 preferred bidders, and round 4 were 26 preferred bidders. So if we look at what we've enabled with a streamlined environmental authorization process, that we have been able to process 1,200 EIA applications, that would translate to about 39,000 megawatts in terms of green energy. But currently we're sitting at still about 5,000 megawatts. And therefore, the opportunity to really move further with implementation of green energy is quite there. We then are also contributing to the programs that have been announced by the Minister of Energy, the S2 Power Independent Power Producer. They also announced the coal, the IPP, but certainly our interest is very much on advancing the clean energy sources and our support for the effective implementation of what is called Strategic Infrastructure Program 161. Next slide, honourable members, again, we just outline exactly what would contribute to FIP 9 and FIP 10, which are all about streamlining and improving efficiency in the environmental authorization processes. Next slide. Those are the corridors. That thing that looks, those thick lines on the map indicate from the north the areas that are earmarked currently for green energy or renewable energy program and transmission infrastructure. So if you are in those areas are also low agricultural land, low potential agricultural land. And therefore, it should be quick for us in the Department of Agriculture to release permits and facilitate decision making in that respect. Next slide. The stress mining towns. Again, here we're talking about the work that we seek to undertake with the Department of Mineral Resources on environmental rehabilitation and restoration, especially looking also at mine dumps. But again, we have not yet quantified, honourable members, what would be the investment. But we have outlined what on in terms of waste beneficiation, that's what we could facilitate in those areas,
and therefore in this coming financial year would also develop a criteria to direct industries in order to ensure that waste is already in those areas, there is prior earmarking of waste disposal sites and waste disposal facilities so that we limit the burden of rehabilitation. I've already spoken to Kalaborwa in the sense of centers. Next slide. Again, that map just shows those red dots show the mining towns, the distressed mining towns that have been prioritized from Kona, and basically that's where we are looking at dovetailing our plans to contribute to in the sector of improving both waste management in those areas and see if we can rehabilitate the conditions of the ecological infrastructure in that respect. Next slide. Private sector partnerships, our ongoing work in respect of effective management of PPP agreements, especially in respect of our entities, SANParks in particular. You may recall SANParks and even Ismangali Show, they were talking about their procurement processes too, that enable participation of private sector but also small and medium and community enterprises. So that would be the work that would be further advanced in respect of private sector participation. And then on the cross-cutting areas, we outlined the work on national skills development plan, that we all work with our entities to contribute science and knowledge, whether it's about oceans or marine environment, biodiversity, as well as the weather and climate information. The ecological health of freshwater-related ecosystems, investments in that regard through the various programs, the Umgeni Ecological Infrastructure Partnership, which also involves other land users incentive programs. Next slide, non-motorized transport program, which again is aimed at developing bicycle and pedestrian routes, which are associated services that support non-motorized transport. Again, this is led by transport, but as a department, we have an agreement, for instance, with an investment of the German government to take the next phase of non-motorized transport, particularly in Johannesburg. Polokwane is the third city. So that is what we would then contribute in that respect. Next slide, on oceans economy, we have appraised members about this work that is being undertaken here. Thank you very much. On that note, that is more the response comparatively from the department on the state of nation affairs.
This was for information.
Yes.
So that as we interact with the department, we don't lose the essence and the impact of the essence of the president's pronouncements and how those pronouncements impact on the work that the department does. So we will take it as well presented. That's what we normally say when we are hired. Well presented. And I think it also gives us a broad sense of how we are responding to the state of the nation address and what plans are we putting forward to ensure implementation of the state of the nation address. So I think that was the intention. And as we interact with you, rest assured we will keep this briefing note with us or in our hearts. So that we see them in your ATPs going forward 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019. Just one issue. As we emphasized the distressed minds, which is what Shelby spoke to, there is a new phenomenon that has also cropped up in the with the advent of the commodity pricing difficulties we have encountered. We know that ArcelorMittal has closed down, literally, in the valley and in Delhi. Now that has got serious impact on the people. It is not the only steel company that has closed down. We also know is that Evra, which used to be Haifa Steel, Evra, has also literally closed down 2 years ago. And we are just putting this so that all of us are quite aware what the depressed economy is doing to our people. Just for your information, there is a gentleman who was working at Airbus in Lübeck who immediately after they were asked not to come back, got sick, went to hospital, and he died last week. And this is how much this depressed economy has affected our life. So I'm just saying, as a country, in fact, some people were came to my house, people that I went with, when it was in high fares. They said, what are we to do now? And I'm putting this question to the House. What are we to do now when you have thousands and thousands of people who, because of the economy of the world, find themselves without jobs? It has a multiplier effect on their families, on their children, on their homes, on everything. So somewhere at the back of our head, again, it's something that we need to respond to as a people. But on that sad note, this meeting is adjourned, and thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you.